Welcome back, Hemingway listeners, to the Hemingway List. We are talking about part something, 7, chapter 6. That's what we're doing. Part 7, chapter 6. Levin makes a bunch of stop-offs. The bowl house, the public meeting, the committee meeting, his home to check on Kitty, and then the club. One comment. Tolstoy, I blame you, Tolstoy, for the lack of conversation about this chapter. And it was this. This is one of those chapters that I sort of forgot right after reading it. I did like Levin accidentally stealing a quote from the newspaper, getting all annoyed with himself when he realizes. That was amusing. Same deal. I'll confess, I did immediately forget what happened in this chapter after reading it. In fact, I had to go and look at the schmoop.com summary. Schmoop.com, by the way, S-H-M-O-O-P, has a good chapter-by-chapter summary of this book and other books, with just sort of 4 to 6-ish dot points about what happened in the chapter. You can summarize it in, I don't know, the dot points about as long as these discussion prompts. So imagine like 3 or 4 discussion prompts that just recap the chapter. They're pretty handy. Especially with chapters like that, where you just end it and go, what just happened? What? All right. Very good, very good, very good. We are now going to read chapter 7. This is going to be a short one because there was no conversation. Chapter 7. Levin arrived at the club in good time. Members and visitors were driving up as he got there. He had long not been there. Not since the days when, after leaving the university, he had lived in Moscow and gone out into society. He remembered the club and the external details of its rooms, but had quite forgotten the impression it then made upon him. But as soon as he entered the semicircular courtyard, got out his sledge and entered the porch, where he was met by a hall porter with a shoulder belt who noiselessly opened the door and bowed to him. As soon as he saw in the hall the coats and galoshes of those of the members who realized that it was easier to take off their galoshes downstairs than to go up in them, and as soon as he heard the mysterious ring of the bell that announced his ascent, and while mounting the shallow steps of the carpeted stairs perceived the statue of the landing, and saw upstairs the third hall porter in club livery, whom he recognized, though the man had aged, who opened the door for him without haste or delay, gazing at the new arrival. Directly he saw all this, Levin was enveloped in the old familiar atmosphere of the place, an atmosphere of repose, ease, and propriety. Holy crap. That was one sentence. Sentence 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 lines that sentence goes for. That's insane. Let me have your hat, sir, said the porter to Levin, who had forgotten the club rule that hats must be left at the entrance. It's a long time since you were here. The prince entered your name yesterday. Prince Oblonsky is not here yet. This hall porter not only knew Levin, but knew all his connections and relatives as well, and at once mentioned some of his intimate friends. Passing first through a room in which were several screens, and then a room on the right in which was a partition and a fruit stall, Levin, having overtaken and passed an old man who was walking slowly, entered the noisy and crowded dining room. He passed among the tables which were nearly all occupied, surveying the guests. Here and there he came across all sorts of people he knew, old and young, some whom he only just knew and some with whom he was intimate. There was not one angry or anxious face among them. All seemed to have left their cares and anxieties behind them in the hall with their hats and to be preparing to enjoying the material blessings of life at their leisure. Sviatsky and Sherbatsky, Nevdovsky and the old prince Vronsky and Koznishev all were there. "Why are you so late?" asked the old prince with a smile, holding out his hand over his shoulder. "How is Kitty?" he added, smoothing the table napkin, which he tucked in behind a button of his waistcoat. "She's all right. They are all three dining together." Aline's, Nadine's. Well, there's no room at our table. Go to that table and be quick and secure a seat, said the old prince, and turning away, he carefully took a plate of fish soup that was handed to him. Levin, here, shouted someone a little farther off in a kindly voice. It was Turovtsin. He sat beside a young military man, and two chairs were tilted against their table. Levin joined them with pleasure. He always liked that good-natured spendthrift, Turovtsin. With him was associated the memory of his proposal to Kitty. But today, after all those strained intellectual conversations, Turovtsin's good-natured face was particularly welcome. These are for you, Oblonsky. He will be here. These are for you and Oblonsky. He will be here in a minute. The military man with merry, ever-laughing eyes, who held himself very erect, was Gagin from Petersburg. Turovtsin introduced him. Oblonsky is always late. Ah, here he is. Have you just come? Asked Oblonsky, hastening toward them. How do you do? Had any vodka? Well then, come. Levin rose and went with him to the large table on which stood various kinds of vodka and a very varied assortment of hors d'oeuvres. It might have been thought that from a score of different hors d'oeuvres it would be possible to select one to any taste, but Oblonsky ordered something special, and one of the liveried footmen brought it at once. They drank a glass of vodka each and returned to their table. While they were still at their soup, Gagin ordered a bottle of champagne and had four glasses filled. Levin did not refuse the proffered wine and ordered another bottle. He was hungry and ate and drank with great pleasure, and with still greater pleasure took part in the simple, merry talk of his companions. Gagin, lowering his voice, related a new Petersburg anecdote, which, though it was indecent and stupid, was so funny that Levin burst into loud laughter and people turned to look at him. "That's in the style of the story. That's just what I can't bear. Do you know it?" asked Oblonsky. "Oh, it's delightful. Bring another bottle," he called to the waiter, and immediately began telling the story. "With Peter Ilyich Vinovsky's compliments," interrupted the old waiter, bringing two delicate glasses of still-sparkling champagne on a tray, and addressing Oblonsky and Levin. Oblonsky took a glass, and exchanging a look with a bald, red-haired man with a moustache, who sat at the other end of their table, smilingly nodded to him. "Who is that?" inquired Levin. "You once met him at my house, do you remember? A nice fellow." Levin followed Oblonsky's example and took the glass. Oblonsky's anecdote was very amusing, too. Then Levin told one, which also was appreciated. Then they talked about horses, about that day's races, and how gallantly Vronsky's Atlasny had won the first prize. Levin hardly noticed how the dinner passed. "Ah, here they are," said Oblonsky, just as they were finishing, leaning back in his chair and stretching out his hand to Vronsky, who was approaching with a tall colonel of the guards. Vronsky's face, too, was lit up by the general pleasant good humour of the club. Gaily leaning his arm on Oblonsky's shoulder, he whispered something to him, and with the same merry smile held out a hand to Levin. "Very glad to meet you," he said. "I looked for you that day at the elections, but was told you had already left." "Yes, I left that same day. We were just speaking about your horse." "I congratulate you," said Levin. "That was quick running." "Oh yes, you keep racehorses too?" "No, my father did, and I remember them, and know something about them." "Where did you dine?" asked Oblonsky. "At the second table, behind the pillars." "He has been congratulated," remarked the colonel. "It's the second time he won the Imperial Prize. If only I had the luck at cards that he has with horses. But why waste the golden moments? I'm off to the infernal regions," added he, and walked away. "That's Yashvin," said Vronsky in reply to Turovtsin's question, as he took a vacant chair beside them. He drank a glass of champagne they offered him and ordered another bottle. Whether influenced by the club or by the wine he had drunk, Levin chatted with Vronsky about the best breeds of cattle and was very pleased to find that he had not the least animosity towards the man. He even told Vronsky, among other things, that he had heard from his wife that she had met him at the Princess Mary Borisovna's. "Oh, the Princess Mary Borisovna, isn't she charming?" cried Oblonsky, and related an anecdote about her which made them all laugh. Vronsky especially burst into such good-natured laughter that Levin felt quite reconciled to him. "Well, have you finished?" asked Oblonsky, rising and smiling. "Let's go." All right, there we go. That's the chapter done. Thanks very much for listening. You're the best. I will see you tomorrow.